Welcome to a special edition of the Business Report as we take a look at the summary of the Republic of Namibia's budget 2025-2026 as tabled today by the Minister Erika Shafuda. Joining me in studio, Robin McGregor from Cirrus Capital, Salome Hai from High Economic Intelligence. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us again.
We haven't had a lot of time to digest, and there is some information outstanding. We'll get onto that in a second, but perhaps I can just let's start out, Salome, and I'll start out with you. Perhaps just first impressions, perhaps just to also set context, we have a minister who's been in office for less than a week presenting a budget at an incredibly pivotal time in Namibia's economic development. So let's just keep that in the back of our minds. But first impressions from what the minister was able to table today.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. I think the first impressions is that there's been almost no deviation from Minister Ipumbushimi's previous budgets, right? Remember that the ruling party's manifesto was had a bit more expansionary intent in terms of what it wanted to do, right? Now, if you look at today's budget, there's nothing of that in that budget, right? You actually see that even if you look at the increase that we got, which is from 100 billion to 106 billion now, you could even say it's slightly just above the inflation rate, right? If you look at the allocations, right, you don't see some of the pronouncements that we saw from the minister, from the president on Saturday, right, in terms of the clarity that one would have wanted to see around these new ministries. If you look at the allocation, it's still the Ministry of Education still gets its own allocation, and then you've got the Ministry of Youth and Sport still get another allocation, but this has now been merged, right? What you also pick up is that in terms of the pillars from what we had last year to what we have now, there's a specific mention of agriculture, right? Obviously, the concerns around the debt servicing cost remain, right? There's been, I mean, for me, I expected a bit of maybe perhaps a change in respect of where we're coming from in terms of what was pronounced in the past days. But clearly the budget process was essentially already concluded by the time some of these pronouncements were made. So it's more of the same in my view, more in the same in terms of the spending patterns, in terms of, again, education getting quite a huge chunk, but with very little outcome to show for that, given the past trends that we have seen. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think at this stage that there has been a huge surprise in my view.
All right. You sound a little underwhelmed. Robert, given the background of how we've arrived here with an election, an inauguration, and a number of other distractions that the country has gone through, is it a surprise that we're sitting with something that resembles a lot of what we saw last year?
I don't think so at this stage. I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, the new administration took over the weekend, so it is very recent. I think one of the reasons why there's a push to get this budget out, and likely a lot of the work was already done by the previous administration's team. I think within the Ministry of Finance, many of the people that do the actual work behind the budget have obviously remained. You know, it's more sort of at the leadership level where there've been a couple of changes. But bear in mind, government's financial year starts next week. And so if you want to now come in with a new administration, new ideas, new changes, and you start from scratch now, you delay government's ability to start spending money in the new fiscal year, because a budget was tabled today. It's going to go for debate in the National Assembly next week. Then it needs to get voted on. The various votes, as they are, have to then also make their appeals. That gets approved. And then only does government actually get to spend money. So it's already going to take quite a while for that money to flow. If you start from scratch now, you delay that process even further. So I think it's a fairly prudent budget. Nothing, no major surprises, one or two disappointments here or there maybe. But I think it's a step to say, all right, we need to at least keep things going. But bear in mind, there's a midterm budget review where then, you know, by that time, this new administration will have had much more time to dig into the numbers, focus on what their priorities are, and maybe present a very different budget come the midterm budget.
All right. So perhaps a prudent approach, things we can fix in 6 months' time. Right now, let's just get something out so we don't block up government. Salome, let's just talk about some of the characters involved. I mean, were quite surprised with some of the pronouncements of the new cabinet. There certainly were a few surprises, and this particular portfolio was one of those that was being eagerly watched. So let's talk about the minister just for a second. She's largely had to get up and present a budget she would have had very little input into, one would imagine, because it would appear that a lot of these changes and shifts were held very closely over the weekend still. So it's unlikely that she would have had a chance to grapple with this. But what do we know about the new Minister of Finance, Erica Shafuda?
Yeah, well, I think Erica, or Honorable Minister Erica Shafuda, has been in government circles for well over 20 years, right? Remember, she was at the heartbeat of finance, because remember that EDs are essentially the operational face of an institution. And at that time, it was essentially the PS, the permanent secretaries, before it was obviously changed in title now. So I think she's got sufficient institutional memory to understand how Treasury functions. Obviously, there are different approaches in terms of when you are an ED and when you're actually the minister. So from that aspect, I think she does have the institutional memory of how Treasury functions. She understands that there's debt obligations that the country has. You can only spend what you have in relation to the debt levels. So from that aspect, we sort of in safe hands, right? But remember that the policy position in terms of what it is that the new administration wants needs to be taken into account, whether it will align with what Madam Finance, or rather the previous ED had, right? For instance, there's a need to move towards jobs, right? Remember, Honorable Shimi had initially, when he came in, had a huge push towards fiscal consolidation, right? To sort of really bring fruitless expenditure under control, if it were. Thereafter, he moved towards fiscal sustainability, right? To sort of now start managing the debt in a manner that you don't necessarily compromise on the development components of government, right? Now there's a need to actually see where is this money going to come from, but also in terms of where are the jobs going to come from, right? I wanted to see, I didn't want necessarily to see a huge spending pattern in terms of the direction of how money will flow, but I wanted to see some level of policy pronouncements. For instance, there was a mention of the new state-owned enterprise that will manage all government assets. Where is that, right? One would have wanted to see, is there actually a certain level of saving with regard to trimming the ministries from 19, if you exclude the minister of in the presidency in the DG. One would have wanted to see that. That did not come through yet. And perhaps the point that's being made around that some of this most probably you want to see in the amendments that might come in the medium-term review. The reality is that what we have seen today is that Madam Honorable Shafuda has sort of kept it very similar to Honorable Shimi. There's been no deviation from that. And more so, also, we were very silent on policy pronouncements, because at the end of the day, policy uncertainty, in my view, is really a big concern, right? There's a $350 million that has been put for contingency, right? There's been mentions around the ENA, maybe whether it's coming back or not, and right? And that has come from the Minister of Works and Transport, which essentially wherein one would assume that department will reside under, right? But nothing has been said about it. So you want to have that clarity around that in a budget statement, right? The numbers is obviously something else, but the statement should bring clarity around some of these gray areas. And I think Madam Shafuda, with institutional memory, maybe is really playing it safe in that respect, and perhaps did not want to rock the boat as an incoming. But you would have wanted to see really the consistency in messaging from what the president spoke about in the inauguration and what we saw today.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is there's a bit of a disconnect between the manifesto and the policy and what we've heard. Robert, was there anything specific in this budget? We have mentioned this in past budgets. What would you want to have seen in this particular budget that you didn't?
I think sort of one of the big promises over the last couple of years, which we've started to see coming in, I think in the last 2 years probably, was especially on the tax side, the reforms that have been coming through, which I think are encouraging to see. I think, the personal income tax amendments we had last year for the first time in about a decade were massively beneficial. It's disappointing to see that because of worries around revenue constraint, that's being the promises that were made for this year have been pushed out. If you look at the budget numbers, it didn't seem to have that much of an impact on government's revenue from those tax changes. And I think largely more beneficial overall. So that's a little bit disappointing. I think good to note that they're continuing with the reductions in the corporate income tax rates. I do think that that's beneficial. And I don't disagree with the idea of the dividend income or the dividend tax being introduced. Again, if you do this prudently, I think you actually optimize, right? Tax policy, to a large extent, should also be used not just to generate revenue for the state, but also to incentivize behavior that you think will benefit the country, right? So where you've got large companies that are very mature and mostly paying out their earnings, I think it's good to get some income from that to tax that. Smaller companies that are growing and are investing, don't tax them as much. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I think a 28% corporate income tax with a 10% domestic dividend tax is still maybe not the best way to do it. We still have a relatively high corporate tax rate then by regional standards as well. But at least things are moving in the right direction. Beyond that, I mean, it's been fairly in line. We don't have any sort of clear pronouncements, as Salomo mentioned, on sort of what the implementation plan has promised, what the manifesto has promised. So I think we'll likely see that closer to the midterm budget once there's been some time to dig into the numbers, especially there isn't much wiggle room in the budget this year, given the redemptions that are coming through, and that has a big financing impact on government. We see a larger deficit than what was initially planned, so that does put them in a tighter spot. And then obviously big questions around sort of the wage bill. I mean, that's also not something that's mentioned explicitly in the budget speech. We had a civil service wage adjustment in 2022, one last year, no indication of sort of what's happening on that going forward. And then obviously in the media, there's been reports about increased employment or job creation or posts being created. I think in the budget speech, it was mentioned that there's funding set aside for additional posts within the Ministry of Health and similar. I think more of an indication on what's going on there, because a big reason that we've had to undergo fiscal consolidation is that there were revenue shocks that was partly driven, or not really driven, because of a revenue issue, right? Our revenue as a percent of GDP shows that we're very well funded. It was largely due to expenditure that grew too quickly. So that was unsustainable, and a large portion of that was the wage bill. And the worry now is that if we start running this and getting government to directly create jobs, you start recreating the issues that we created 2010 to 2015 that we spent the last decade trying to undo.
So let's talk about taxation for a second, because it seems that that's at least one of the areas that we've seen some improvement, and it looks like collections are on track to meet this year's budget. But the budget speech includes new tax measures to improve revenue collection while still ensuring fairness. There's not a lot of detail what that means. Salomo, any idea what those could be?
Yeah, so I think there's the special economic zones that they speak about in the budget as well, where the SMEs would get a special rate, I think, of 20% that they spoke about there. So that's also something that we are looking forward to, because SMEs could potentially move them in respect of the challenges that we have. So we want to see how that actually plays itself out in terms of how the special economic zones, given that now the Ministry of Trade and Industrialization has also moved to the Ministry of Mines and Energy, right? So remember that generally mining historically was not really one of the biggest creators of jobs, precisely because of the capital intensity that it has. So are we saying that now we're going to move towards beneficiation and value addition, which will then potentially create the jobs, or this corporate tax for SMEs, which is 20% on the special economic zones, what would that entail? But generally, I think that's definitely, for me, one of the highlights of the budget in terms of what we want to see, or what I want to see. You have also, there was the reduction in terms of the usual commitments from the mining sector in terms of tax. There was a decline because of what happened in the diamond industry over the past year. So that's obviously not so good as well. There has been also another reduction from the SACU receipts that has come through in the budget as well. But over and above that, I think the whole amnesty approach in terms of the carrot and stick has helped, because I think 3 billion and some odd have been collected through that process, which tells you that the NAMRA guys are working, which is good. So tax remain an important component of our expenditure plan. In my view, again, I think we need more people paying tax as opposed to more people on social grants, because at the end of the day, you don't want to kill the goose that's laying the golden egg. So jobs and more jobs is really what's needed to be able to really optimize. But over and above that, the revenue plan around tax collection and what Robert has alluded to in terms of the progressive regime that we have seen in terms of bringing down corporate tax over the years. And it hasn't started recently. I mean, if you go back in history, there's always been a move to try and bring it down. So I think over and above that, there has been some positives. But I really want to have that consistency, right, in the messaging around where we are going in terms of when the minister speaks about, or sorry, when the president speaks about her plans in terms of changing the fortunes of the Namibians and the majority, which are essentially the youth with jobs. What are those jobs? Again, there's an amount that has been earmarked towards the green schemes for agriculture. And I think agriculture is actually being mentioned as one of the pillars for this. But what exactly are we doing there? Because the green schemes have been, public investment has flown towards that, but we've not really seen the return on that investment. So obviously it's one thing to have the tax performing to the best of its ability. Essentially, there's still more room in terms of really getting more people employed so that the tax can further move. But over and above that, I'm happy with how the tax, obviously, the external factors around SACU receipts and then the diamond sector is obviously not a blow.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we are seeing some encouraging signs around the focus to rather broaden the tax base, base as opposed to sort of drawing more from the existing base. So the reduction in the corporate tax rates is the right move and an indication of that, right? Rather get more more companies profitable and paying tax than finding or incentivizing ways for them to try and reduce their tax burden. So sort of give a more fair level of taxation. Again, then like the personal income tax bracket adjustments we had last year, the move to do those, not this year, but again in future. And then we're seeing some other, I mean, small indications, right? This it's not necessarily big volumes coming in, but there was, for instance, this talk around the substantive loans by companies used or through a pref share method. So they indicate something like 41 million expected from that. It's not a big number if you're talking a budget of 100 billion, but basically that we're seeing these efforts to try and make sort of a fair tax base, not allowing for too many ways to try and avoid or evade tax. I think these moves, there was an mention of moving to electronic invoicing or digital invoicing for VAT and similar. So these moves, I mean, I think if you make tax compliance easier, you benefit from it. And I think that's been a very clear indication in the revenue numbers, is that in this move to NAMRA, we've seen a massive improvement, I think, in enforcement and collections just from that drive. And that's been a big benefit. And I think we continue to see that coming through in the numbers as well, and some indications of that in some of the points in the speech.
Of course, stable tax revenue gives us confidence to spend correctly. So where we are spending, once again, we see huge proportions to education and healthcare. So, I mean, you've already mentioned the fact that we don't really see a return. But, Robert, we seem to keep putting lots of money into probably the two key areas in our industry or in our economy that doesn't seem to be giving those returns. We hear anecdotally and see almost on a daily basis the failure of the healthcare system, and our education system continues to perhaps see the deficit between what's required in the workforce and what's being produced continue to widen on a year-on-year basis. I mean, is putting more money into it without the detail we see on the return still worth the investment?
I mean, it's obviously difficult to stop spending that money, and there's large implications for that. I think, I mean, what we very definitely see is that the return isn't there. I think if you compare us to the OECD countries, I think on education we spend probably roughly double per capita than what OECD countries do, and our results are nowhere near what we see in most of those economies. And so there's very clearly a quality challenge there. I think the issue is not just how much money we spend on it, and throwing more money is not going to solve that problem. But I think what we need to see is a massive shift in accountability across healthcare and education. So the circumstances that a lot of the people in those industries find themselves in is not always great. And I think we've seen chronic underspending, especially from a capital perspective, on that, because there's such a large labor portion that absorbs most of the spending. But I think the approach that needs to be taken there is, obviously we need to rectify the capital expenditure. If you see the conditions of state hospitals, if you see the stories of state schools and kids going to school, I mean, in shocking conditions. So that needs to be addressed on the one side. But on the operational side, we need to make sure that there's accountability. I mean, if staff aren't pitching up for work, still drawing a salary, whether it's in a hospital or school, it's the public that pay that price. And I don't think we see that level of accountability carried through the public sector, which is one of the reasons we don't have that bang for buck.
So one of the key elements to our economy that we keep an eye on every year and you chaps talk about endlessly is our public debt, which continues to rise, sitting at around 66% of GDP at the moment. The speech speaks about managing that rising public debt. Once again, it's a little bit light on a lot of detail there as to how that's going to happen, as well as reduce the deficit over the medium term. Are you satisfied that the intent is backed by some sort of plan?
Yeah. So, Gary, I've got a different view on debt generally. Right, and my view is that, the size of debt, right, is the size of debt, but the bigger concern really is the direction of debt, in terms of where is debt flowing towards, right? Is it flowing towards the productive side of the economy? Because if you are able to do that, what that means is that you will then be able to repay your debt, because there will definitely be a return, because you will be productive, right? So, but generally, if you look at the budget, our statement now in relation to where we were, debt to GDP was around 60, 66 last year. They're projecting it to sort of come down now to 62%. So there is some level of thinking behind it. Obviously, there's the redemption on the Eurobond and then also the redemption on the IMF fund, the IMF loan that we took. So yes, obviously, there is a borrowing plan and sort of repayment plan to make sure that we can sort of deal with this. Obviously, the debt servicing cost still remain a concern if you look at the total budget, where what's allocated to the operational budget, what's allocated to the development budget, and then a component of that debt servicing cost, which is still on the high side. So if we are able to productively use our debt, obviously, through that you could have a situation where your revenue grow much quicker than your expenditure. But I want to touch on something here, especially in terms of where we are going as a country. Remember that we have this emergence of the oil and gas sector, right, that will now move under the presidency, right? And we saw that for this year, there's an amount of $1.5 billion that has been allocated to the presidents. Again, in terms of creating the jobs and looking at the value chain of oil and gas, and in the absence of what accrues to Namibians in that value chain, right, it leaves us again exposed as a country, because the greater the exploration goes on, the more these activities take off, the more the smaller the bargaining window becomes for government. And just from a sort of plan perspective, again, I would have wanted to see what exactly will we do differently in terms of moving oil and gas out of the Ministry of Mines and Energy, and also the legislative issues around the Mineral Act that speaks to X must be signed off by the minister. Right? What do we do with it? So remember, this is a budget statement, right? And some of these things one would really have wanted to see come out now. But over and above that, to your initial question around debt, I think that there was a period where our debt grew too quick, too fast. But I think in the past 3 to 4 years, we have sort of now really brought it under certain control. But if there's a need to perhaps look at borrowing for the productive side of the economy, I would really want to say a government shouldn't necessarily be too shy to do it.
All right. Robert, you agree with that statement? We might need to borrow more, but we need to borrow it for the right things?
I think, I mean, if you borrow for the right reasons, by all means, if it has larger benefits, right? So if you're borrowing and you're spending on productive assets, so for instance, on critical infrastructure, logistics infrastructure, something that pays dividends through economic growth, more companies paying tax, more companies hiring people, yes. I think that the two challenges that we face, obviously, is number one, the more debt we issue, the more we pay in interest expense, right? So that's taking up, what, around $13 billion in the budget at the moment. It's a sizable amount. If you exclude interest payments, we run a budget surplus, right? So that means that the budget is then actually we're spending less than we earn, which is where we need to be. So interest payments are taking up a big proportion of that. Obviously, yeah, the more you borrow, the more you pay on that. Something else to bear in mind, however, is that government doesn't actually just borrow in terms of the deficit, right? So government also has lots of money or lots of debt from previous issuances that falls due every year. So the Eurobond is an example. In October this year, we've got the IMF Rapid Financing Instrument, which is repayable in quarterly installments from last year up until sometime next year. We've got domestic debt instruments, so government debt that's issued in our market that's falling due. We've got an inflation-linked bond this year, nominal bond, it's around $3 billion, I think. And so government doesn't necessarily always repay those out of its own savings, right? Government doesn't really have much in savings. So government might be running a deficit of, say, $12-13 billion this year, and so they'll need to borrow $12 or $13 billion this year to finance that. But over and above that, the repayments that they need to make during the course of this year also get added to that. So government isn't just borrowing. So on a net basis, yes, they're probably borrowing $12-13 billion, but they still need to raise, say, I think this year it's around $17-18 billion in the domestic market. And obviously, you know, basic economic supply and demand, the more supply of bonds you issue, price becomes an issue for government. And then you start making your borrowing more expensive again. And so there is a need to really try and bring that under control. We see, I think for this year, the deficit is at around 4.6% of GDP, so a bit on the high side. Last year was initially estimated at 3.2%. It came in at 3.9%, so higher than expected. I think the target, I see the target is to aim it at 4%. Again, there's a risk that we overshoot, especially if we start to see sort of a fiscal stimulus come through over the next couple of years. And we really do need to at least try and maintain it in sustainable manners, because if we keep promising that we're going to move in the right direction, but we don't, again, when you start issuing debt, the market will price for that. They say, you've promised us this, you haven't delivered, so we're going to start making your debt more expensive because you aren't delivering on your promises. And again, we start seeing that come through in interest expense. In Namibia, it's not as bad as in South Africa. I think in South Africa, for every R1 that the government brings in revenue, they're paying 22 cents to service that debt. Namibia is on a slightly better level, but it is still quite elevated. I think we're around 14-15%.
So let's talk about investments then. We've said if we're going to borrow for investing, let's do it. There's oil and gas that continues to be treated in a very muted fashion from a lot of the proclamations over the last while. In fact, it could be regarded that the move of this entire sector out of the ministry into under the arms of the presidency is a continuation of what we saw under President Geingob, where he felt the ministries weren't getting traction, he'll look after it himself, which in many ways perhaps sends mixed messages. But from an investment perspective, there's obviously, we now certainly have a wealth of areas to invest in. One of those, Sulaiman, I'm going to pass you on this particular one, is this idea that green energy is an investable area and can bring good returns for the country. And here we're cautious to make it broader than just the concept around green hydrogen. Green energy is being prioritized and was mentioned specifically in the speech as an area of investment focus. What are your feelings about that?
Look, I think the whole energy transition conversation, right? Again, I've got, I refer to it as energy additionality, right? Because you're bringing in additional energy into the grid as opposed to the transition that everyone speaks about. Obviously, we are endowed with a lot of sun, which is good for the renewable energy, and we had reasonable success with our IPPs, right? But if you look at a country like South Africa, for instance, that has gone much bigger in terms of its IPPs, given the Eskom challenges that they had, if you look at their Eskom annual reports or the financial reports, if it were, you find that the cost on IPPs, right, is almost between 20% and 30%, right? But if you look at their contribution towards the energy mix, right, it's slightly much smaller. So one should be careful how you sort of bring this investment area into a country like Namibia, right? So if the question is there need to definitely look at import substitution from energy perspective and look at additional IPPs within the context of Namibia, definitely yes. What does it mean in relation to other sort of investment areas? I don't want to make the point that it should enjoy greater sort of focus than others. I mean, again, in today's conversation, rather in the budget statement, we didn't hear anything about green hydrogen, right? And that goes to my initial point about where we are, right? The messaging and the consistency that one wants to see. Overall, in terms of the investor climate that we have currently, I think Namibia is at a very good place. I don't think that we've been here in a very, very long time in terms of investor confidence. The reality is that the foreign direct investment that has flown into the country in the past 2 years did not move the needle in terms of our challenges, which is unemployment. It's essentially been the exploration around the oil and gas, which in its very nature is capital intensive, so it doesn't create jobs, right? But further in the value chain, there could potentially be jobs. And this is why it's important to make sure that from a policy perspective, those areas are sort of bedded down very early during the conversation. Remember, Gary, everywhere you go in the world, all the investors want is certainty. They don't want to remain mid-air. Are they taking off or are they landing, right? Norway, in terms of the development of their oil industry, had 7 pillars in terms of what they wanted to do. Today, the majority of the oil industry assets are owned by the Norwegian government. Qatar had the Qatarization, right? So investment and the investment climate for Namibia currently is at an all-time high, in my view. I mean, if you look at our yields as well, in terms of the bond side, we're doing quite well. But we need to really send out a message in terms of what works for Namibia and how can we change how do we turn around the challenges that we have, the poverty, the unemployment, through direct intervention. And that will also let investors know what they are signing up for, as opposed to just being a bit too silent and muted.
So, Robert, one of the areas, and we're nearly out of time, gentlemen, one of the areas that has been highlighted in this budget speech is support for the stimulation of economic growth through industrialization, that by its very nature is complicated and resides in an ecosystem. What Saloma is saying is it's nice to see for direct foreign investment. We need to see job creation. Industrialization can sometimes leave a large portion of the country behind. At the same time, we see agriculture being targeted as well, mostly from a food security perspective. Are we going fast enough to where we need to be in that space?
Look, I think, I mean, when we talk about industrialization, often the focus tends to be on the secondary industries, right? So you're talking about manufacturing and construction to a large extent. So the construction industry has been hollowed out over the last 10 years. It's what, probably about the fifth of the size it was in around 2014. And I think the outlook there is more positive now than it has been in the last 10 years. So things are moving slightly in the right direction there. But bear in mind, I mean, going down the sort of the old school approach of first you go primary industries, agrarian revolution, then you move secondary industrial revolution, then you move tertiary. Namibia's economy is already around 60% from the tertiary industries. That is by far the largest part of the economy. I mean, government is a big proportion of that, wholesale and retail trade, logistics, and other sectors. Focusing on that sort of industrialization, whether it's now mineral beneficiation or other manufacturing, you need to bear in mind that, firstly, we have a very small market with very limited wealth. Go to any mall in Namibia, go to a mall in Sandton, and you can see the difference in wealth. Like, it's glaring, right? You've got a limited market size, and you've got very high input costs. You've got limited skills availability in country, firstly. You've got relatively high costs for electricity. And then, I mean, water security doesn't exist. And we haven't done anything about it in the last 10 years. I'm not sure I see anything that will resolve that in the next 10 years. And so if you want to go down that route, you can. I don't think that the role of government should be to say, we're going to create jobs through the manufacturing sector, right? The way an economy works is you can't preordain what works, what isn't going to work, and then expect it to play out. The way you should do it is to say, we're going to create the best environment for people to come in, try something, see what works. If it works, great. If it doesn't, it's the unfortunate reality of life and of the economy. I mean, if I go to work tomorrow, I'm not guaranteed that my job is going to be there tomorrow, a week from now, a year from now. There is no certainty in that. And I think the same way, we can't centralize planning and economy and say, this is the sector that's going to create jobs. Many governments have tried that. Most of the governments in our region try it, and it never works out. We should create a level playing field and say, all right, come try here. We'll make it easy for you to do that. We'll give you the benefit to do that here. And if it works out, great. We know we're moving in the right direction. If it doesn't, you've tried. We're going to have to try something different. But to have the government focus and direct and say, this is what's going to work, it's inefficient, and it tends to end with more problems than anything else.
Right. We're out of time. So just closing thoughts in 30 seconds or less. What about this budget speech today gives you great hope that there's a plan and we're on track towards it?
Yeah, I think we will be able to redeem our debt, which will perhaps then free a bit of more spending to be able to give the fiscal stimulus. And then obviously we hope that in the medium term review, you will have a bit of more detail. And we definitely need to move towards direct intervention in terms of policy for job creation.
Thank you. Robert, good news?
In general, I mean, it's, as I said, sort of a prudent budget. I think the good news for me is that from the tax policy side, we're seeing a continuity in moving in the right direction. So that for me is quite positive. And I think what's also encouraging is we haven't seen sort of an opening of the taps, right? It's not, all right, we've got a new administration, let's spend our way through this. And I hope to continue seeing that we balance the spending side with ensuring that we're not driving or redoing the issues that we saw from the sort of 2010 to 2015 era.
Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for your thoughts. Salam Ahai from Ahai Economic Intelligence. Robert McGregor from Sirius Capital. Thank you for your thoughts. No doubt in 6 months' time, we'll be sitting down again with a mid-budget review, hoping to have a little bit more detail to work with. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks.